intelligence agency called these meetings. It also places written restrictions on our staff as to whether they can or can't go on strike within our premises, all of those kind of things. Just a little bit of extra compliance. External auditors. 5 years ago, at inception, ABP was audited by PricewaterhouseCoopers. 4 years ago, we changed that in Conkey. We served for 3 to 4 years. We are now in the first year of Ramati coming in as a fresh external auditor with the approval of the AG's office and taking a fresh look at how we do things. Then in addition, as if that's not enough, we're subject to ISO standards and various, all the requirements of the registrar, and that's not only in South Africa, but in the other countries we do business with, like Tanzania and up the East Coast and elsewhere in Europe. So we're very much in a regulated business environment. And that corporate governance, the total governance parameter, is something that the non-executive board wishes to focus on very, very clearly so that we maintain and maintain a clean reputation and do the right things properly. Coming into the business itself, I'd now like to ask Dr. Jassy to take over and take you into the heart of the business. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much. Chair of the Portfolio Committee, member of the Portfolio Committee, the Director General and the Deputy Director General, and our colleagues from the ARC. As the Chair has indicated, I will deal with the core of the business of all the people's biological products. Before I do so, I want to say, as the Chairman said, that I'm a newly appointed Managing Director, but I am not entirely new to the business of all, because when the corporation, when the company was incorporated into a company way back in 2000, I was one of the first board members to be appointed to provide oversight to the organization. So as I come in, I'm not entirely new. In recognition of the fact that we have a new administration and therefore some members of the portfolio committee may be new, I have decided to structure the presentation in such a way I delve a little bit in the history as a way of inducting our new members. The history of ownership was dated back in 1908 when CERNFIT was established as a veterinary institute.
These new members, they don't like that word when you say they're being inducted.
Okay.
You know, they usually say you can't induct, you know, a member of parliament being an official. And to a point where they even couch the terminology as information sharing.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Yes. Then in 1958, ownership board was established as a dedicated vaccine facility. It had operated that way until in 1992 when the Agricultural Research Council was established. At that stage, when the Agricultural Research Council was established, on the OBP did not become part of the ARC. Instead, it became part of the Department of Agriculture. And then later on, then in 2000, the corporation was removed as a directorate from the Department of Agriculture and became an incorporated company. Now, just by way of an overview of what we mean when we talk about ownership board complex, there at ownership board we've got three institutions. First, you've got the veterinary faculty of the University of Pretoria, whose function is actually to train veterinarians. Then we've got the ARC, which is actually the OVR, which produces services in diagnostic production. It also has got a foot and mouth facility, as you've heard this morning, and its core function is research. And then there is also OBP, which is our service. Our core function, of course, is the manufacture and marketing of animal vaccines to support the livestock industry. And we do that for vaccines and also for a range of biological reagents. The OBP, was established in terms of the Ondersteel Board Biological OBPF Act 19 of 1999 to provide for the establishment of, which states that it is to provide for the establishment of a company to manage the institution known as Ondersteel Board Biological Programs, the appointment of directors, the holding of disposal of shares in the company, the transfer of personnel to the company, and the transfer of assets to the company, and the provision of matters connected thereto. That's the founding of the OBPF. The mandate of OBP is to play a pivotal role in the management and prevention of animal diseases in South Africa, the SADC, and the rest of Africa. Those, we see those areas as our primary focus areas. And so we direct most of our efforts in that direction. Although we understand that we play a role in the world as well in the provision, because some of our vaccines go outside of Africa. We see our mission to be a global biotech manufacturer and the provider of animal health products, underpinned by skilled, innovative, and passionate teams. Our mission is to translate science into biological products, knowledge, and technology, resulting in improved animal health, food security, safety for all stakeholders. What are the products that we manufacture? We manufacture the current range of products that we manufacture includes 28 bacterial vaccines, 14 viral vaccines, 8 blood vaccines, and 6 diagnosis reagents. The production capacity of our factory can produce up to 170 million doses a year of vaccine. And our product mix covers the following species. We have got vaccines for cattle, sheep, goats, equine, poultry, and we also produce bulk vaccine antigens. We sell as bulk and the end user packets themselves. The kind of expertise that is there at Ondersteel Board is the expertise that allows for the immunology and the antigen research, bacteriology, virology, molecular biology. We have got the expertise in vaccine delivery, production processes, bioreactor technology, freeze-drying technology, cell culture. We have also got quality control. We have a host of experimental animals. Since we are doing some limited research as well, we also do product development and according to some site protocol. We provide bulk antigen production for also Morocco and South America. We will talk later about the vaccine bank, which is intended also to support our farmers, especially in South Africa and in the EU. We also have custom-made vaccines for Bluetongue for Europe, as well as quality control, ISO 900 compliant, ISO 9001 compliant. In the overall scheme of things, these are the key vaccines that are manufactured by Ondersteel Board in the support of the animal industry. The CBDP, the Rift Valley fever vaccine, the lumpy skin disease vaccine, Rinderpest, and Bluetongue, and the three-day sickness, and the Newcastle disease. These are the core key vaccines from which most of the revenue of OBP is generated. We also produce vaccines against parasitic diseases like anaplasmosis and heartwater and babesiosis. Of the vaccine mixes that we are produced at OBP, there are those that are actually unique to OBP, and that we are the sole producers of. Those include the Bluetongue against 15 serotypes, African horse sickness, Newcastle disease, Makarov strain, Rift Valley fever, inactivated, and a number of autogenous vaccines And we are also flexible to, for custom made vaccine antigens and appropriate combinations. This is the kind of revenue that the OBP factory has generated. And as the chair of the board has indicated earlier, we generate our own revenue from which we support our operational work. We generate, of course, some of the revenue from our local sales and some of the revenue from export sales. And these are the figures in millions. If I can put them in the form of those graphs, you can see that we have quite a mix of revenue coming from export sales and also from local sales. The point to make here, which I will come back to later, is that if you go back to 2004, 2005, and you go back those years, we used to generate a lot of revenue from export sales. That has dwindled substantially over the years, that market for OBP. And one of the key reasons why we have lost that those sales to export sales has been the stage of our plant, which has not been GMP compliant, because it is an old plant. As a consequence of that, we have lost market in Europe substantially. Instead, the Europeans whom we used to supply with Bluetongue vaccines, especially to Italy and so on and so forth, put a stop to the import of vaccines made on the seaboard. And I'll talk later about that aspect. Okay, so those are the kind of revenues we generate from our. Now let me just talk about the strategic trust that we are looking. What are the key things that we look at in terms of the managing this business and taking it forward? And the challenges and the strategic things that we wish to achieve. We've got the OBP plant, which needs an upgrade. We need to develop a vaccine bank in order to be able to respond better when there is an outbreak of diseases. South Africa. One of the reasons why we need a vaccine bank is because, unlike other products, the manufacture of biological products actually takes a long time. The lead times are very long. For example, you could take 6 to 9 weeks just manufacturing one batch of a product. And when there is an outbreak of a disease during that time, the farmer out there in the Free State, in Transkei, whatever he is, he does not have the liberty to wait for the factory to take 6 weeks manufacturing a drug, a vaccine. And so I'll talk about this later on. Then the other strategic trust that we are looking at is the development of new products. This is where, in fact, and also the development of new products, and also we wish to contribute significantly to the rural development agenda, which is one of the 10 priorities of government, also elucidated in the vote 23 of the minister. Then we also have the desire to increase the market growth of the organization. We have a serious need for support for research and development. I'll come back to this matter when I break down each one of these points. And then, of course, lastly, human capital development is ours. So those 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 are the trusts that are before us, that the board and the executive understand to be the issues to be pursued in the next few years. Let me take each one of those and unpack it. The upgrade of the plant. The need to upgrade the plant, I indicated when I was talking about the history of the plant, that it dates back to 1958. And as a consequence, it is too old and dilapidated to meet the challenges of today's high-tech manufacturing. And that is why we've lost market in Europe and so on. So we actually need you to upgrade that plant in order for us to be sustainable, in order for us to have better capacity, and in order for us to be internationally competitive, and also, of course, for environmental reasons, as you can see that I've mentioned that the green building. Now we've done some studies, preliminary studies, towards this direction. And it has become apparent to us that from the revenue and investment that our organization has, it is not possible to undertake this kind of work. Perhaps we could find equipment, because also the challenge of equipment, some of the equipment is old. We can do that to a large extent. But the actual creation of a new factory, which is compliant to good manufacturing practices, which will allow us to be competitive as a factory, cannot possibly be funded from the revenues generated by the company. And therefore, for that purpose, we need investment. Okay? And as you know, that this is a government organization, a government company, the first point where we look at is the government, to see if, to what extent they can support this agenda of creating a new plan. If not the government, then probably the board and the executives need to look at what other sources of funding have to be found in order to deal with this. Otherwise, this is not a sustainable situation. That's the first strategy thrust. The second one has to do with the whole desire to have a vaccine bank. Or, let me put it this way, we need to have contingency vaccines. In South Africa, in some areas, we are quite vulnerable to transboundary diseases. We are quite vulnerable to sporadic outbreak of diseases. Now, as I've mentioned earlier, the biological products that we sell take a long time to manufacture. The lead times are excessively long. And therefore, it is our strategic approach to say, let us keep strategic stock of vaccines. Now, some of the challenges, of course, in keeping strategic stocks of vaccines is that, number one, increase the inventory, which is actually not good for business. And also you run a risk in that some of these products may expire. As you know, pharmaceutical and biological products expire. Some of them have got a short shelf life of about, say, 24 months and so on and so forth. So you cannot put these stocks there for an inordinate long time and then they expire before they have been used. So we deal with all those issues. We are currently in discussion with the Department of Agriculture and Forestry, our own department, to see how we can manage this aspect so that it can allow us to respond more expeditiously when there is an outbreak. Because our core approach is actually prevention of animal disease. And that is very important. We encourage farmers to vaccinate. And it is therefore important that when they respond to that need to vaccinate, we must have the vaccine to supply. Then the next area that we are looking at is the whole area of ensuring that we've got new products. I have indicated in my presentation earlier that we are an old sector. Our products are old. There is a need that the products that we manufacture and supply must continue to be supplemented by new products. You may want, for example, multivalent vaccines, and so on and so forth, to support the farming industry. Now, in order for us to have these new products, clearly we must have an output of research somewhere. And that is actually a gap so far, because the kind of research that is resident at OBP is not substantial enough to be able to engage in basic research. So we have to therefore source those products from outside. And that is where our colleagues from the ARC the universities and other areas that we are looking at could come in to support us in this area. In fact, to this extent, we are starting preliminary discussions with the ERC about how can we, in a focused way, have support from their research capacity so that we are able to generate new products for under support for this purpose. Let me talk another strategic track that we are looking at, the whole area of rural development. We know that this is an important aspect in terms of the government. We support this and we want to make sure that we are able to the best we can, given the mandate of the business we are in, to support the whole area of rural development. We want, in support of that agenda, to have strategic availability of vaccines, economically viable vaccines. We want to empower those people out there in rural areas who do not have the expertise with the support that we can best provide. In this regard, we work very closely with community groups such as NASA, which is the National Association of Farmers Union. Yes, sorry. Then you've got NERPOR, the guys who deal with red meat producers organization, and then you've got wool growers organization. And those guys, we support them a lot in terms of sponsorship, in terms of giving technical support, and so on and so forth. So some of the things that we focus on doing now. By the way, in order for us to achieve some of the things we want to achieve, we want to work very closely with the provincial departments of agriculture. The things that we do to promote access to vaccines, especially for emerging farmers, is that the vaccines that go out to provinces, that we sell to provinces, we sell those at a 25% discount because we know that they are destined for the disadvantage, if I may use that way, farmers. So we look at the partnership with the provincial department as a very important vehicle for us to reach out, because we cannot do that alone. We simply don't have the capacity to do that. Now, also the National Department of Agriculture has embarked on what they call a primary health care program. Now, we want to support that program. In fact, we've already identified a list of vaccines that will support that program for common diseases. And in support of that program, we also tailor-make certain packs, make small packs of vaccines, because a very disadvantaged farmer out there will not generally have a large number of cattle or whatever. So they would want to have smaller packs and so on and so forth. So we are looking at doing that kind of thing. And also, we have tried to persuade the company that helps us to distribute the vaccine to invest in a rep, in some reps who actually service the emerging farmers. And so those are some of the initiatives that we do in order to support this overall agenda of rural development, food safety, and livestock support. Now, clearly it is important for any company's blood to succeed that it must have market growth. So in so doing, we want to also try to find growth for the market of OBP vaccines. The area of growth for us, I must point out that there's a huge competition, and it is a very small industry. And a lot of external role players are in the country who compete with OBP, and they compete with new products that have been researched from outside of the country. and in some instances we are just unable to compete with them. Some of our market share nationally is being eroded. We, however, have focused a lot, not just nationally, externally. A lot of our products go out to the African countries, such as Tanzania, such as Sudan, such as Zimbabwe. In fact, right now we are preparing a product for Zimbabwe in collaboration with the African African Union funding that is due to support Zimbabwe. Okay. So those are some of the initiatives. Then we go to some of the challenges. The last strategy for us that I want to talk about is every organization has got to deal with human capital development. And of course there are challenges in that area. One of the areas that is a challenge to us is that the technology for the manufacture of biological products, such as vaccine, is a very specialized technology. There aren't many people who have got the skill and expertise in this area. As a matter of fact, most of our workforce that has got the skill is aging. We've got a very aging workforce. So part of the mitigating that risk is to ensure that we've got good up-and-coming people who are able to take over when those guys retire. So we are working with that. We've got, of course, all other challenges relating to aid, education and training, and intellectual property management, and so on and so forth. In summary, here are the challenges that we look at as far as the business goes. In summary, we've got the challenging of the funding of the upgrade of the sector. We've got the challenge of research and innovation to produce new products, to produce new vaccines. We've got, as I've indicated, an aging company, which requires a lot of maintenance. We have got international competition that is in the country. We have got issues of GMP compliance that we must deal with, and they are costly. There is a challenge of distributing our products to rural clients. In other words, if I manufacture a vaccine in Pretoria as I do, how do I get it to Mlandoli? How do I get it to a farmer out in the Nongoma, in the sticks? So those are the kinds of challenges that we are working on. The technical information that is made available to the farmer. A farmer who is not necessarily English-speaking, African-speaking, are there any costs? What are we doing to make him knowledgeable about the technical aspects of the vaccine? Which means we must, in many instances, translate the package insert into various languages, and so on and so forth, and promote in the radio, and so on and so forth. And of course, like any other company, we've got to protect the trade secrets and patents, and so on. So I'm going to hold here, and then honorable members, and then invite the chief financial officer to deal with the aspects of the money, the budget, and so on and so forth.
Thank you, Mr. Kijas. Honorable Chairperson, honorable members, the members of the shareholder or representative of the shareholder, and my colleagues from the ARC, good afternoon. What I'm going to do is basically take through the budget. I'm going to start with the assumptions, and then from there I go to the income statement and the balance sheet. And I will sit in this, I will just indicate as I go through the presentation some of the links between the strategic trust that Dr. Jassy has indicated and what is in these numbers. And if I go to the first assumption on revenue, one is that normally the principle in the industry is that the prices of products are reviewed twice a year, which happens on the 1st of September as well as the 1st of March each year. So that we've incorporated into the budget. And then the other one, which then talks to the first strategic trust that Dr. Jesse elaborated upon, which is the upgrades, the dire need to upgrade the facilities, has actually resulted in royalty revenue for OPP, where, as he indicated, that because we do not have these facilities that comply to, for example, the European Pharmaceutical Products Manufacturing Standards, then we've had to actually enter into collaboration with other partners in order to make sure that we're still in a position to sell our vaccine. And then the next one is that revenue from new products is not included. And then the next one is that the discount policy is reviewed based on a costing exercise. What used to happen in the past before I joined the company was that we've never made reference to what our products are actually costing us as a company to arrive at what price we need to sell them. But we've just finalized the cost now of what our products are costing us. Because in the past, the market used to dictate how much you would actually be selling your product. And we also focusing, in fact, we budgeted that, or we assume that we're going to be selling, in fact, we're going to be becoming the supplier of choice to most of the government departments, and therefore we'll be getting first preference before consideration to our competition, which is owned outside South Africa. And then on the cost of sales, an efficiency saving is assumed based on the benefits of the product costing exercise, the implementation of purchases based on economic order quantities, and the appointment of the Chief Operations Office, which is expected to take place. And the economic and efficient use of production resources, which is a draft from the MG's office. And then the third one is on the staff cost, that an average 10% increase was estimated when we compiled this budget last year. And then, as I've indicated in the second assumption, that the positions of COO, BDO, legal officer were going to be filled. And then an 8% across the board average increase is assumed on the other expenses. And then title claim and other standard allowances to be revised. And then number five is capital expenditure, which Dr. Jesse referred to. We're assuming that the funding for the upgrade will actually be approved, because in the process of the harmonization of the pharmaceutical products manufacturing standards, South Africa is actually joining the choir in actually getting itself ready to comply with those standards. And what it means is that now it's a good thing, but then as much as we've lost to the market in the European market and other parts where the GMP requirements are actually a prerequisite before you can sell your products, and therefore we are actually facing the same thing, and we are going to face the same thing in South Africa if we do harmonize, that we will not even be able to sell products in South Africa if we do not upgrade our facilities. And then there's a 15 million capex amount which is included in the budget, and then which is just for this 2019 financial year. Then if I go to the income statement, we've budgeted for this 2019 financial year 91 million rand, and then cost of sales of 52 million rand, which then gives you a gross profit or gross margin of 39 million rand. And then we budgeted for expenses of 50 million rand, and then operating loss of 11 million rand. And then we, as has been the past, if you would have looked at the company's annual report for the past 2 years, with most of the time, if we made a net profit, then it's purely because of the net income from investment. And then we're focusing a lot at the end of this 2009-10 financial year of 2 million. Then in fact, just before I go there, what you would see in this income statement is actually an erosion of value that, and that is purely due to the old equipment that we have, with a bulk of these expenses are directly related to the maintenance of the old equipment. Then if I go to the balances, if you look at the non-current assets, because of their aging, you will see they move from 65 million in 2010 to 57 million at the end of 2011 to 50 million at the end of 2012. This is in spite of the 15 million rand capital expenditure that we're projecting for this year. And then we've got current assets of 107 million. And that's a bulk of it, about 80%, is because of the cash resources, which are directly attributable to the sales that Dr. Jesse mentioned that we used to have when we were selling our products externally to countries like Italy. And then we have got equity of 161 million, and then current liabilities of 11 million for the 2010 financial year. And that concludes my part of the proposition. Thank you.
If I can just recap, we're OEP Limited, we're not PDY Limited, we're a public company. Our purpose is we develop vaccines, we manufacture and supply vaccines. So develop, manufacture and supply. We have strong leadership, there's a good relationship with the unions, a strong labour force and a very dedicated team of people out there working in the factory. We would be delighted if you and members of your committee would visit our plant. We'd love to show you around that you can actually see the production line. I put it to you that when South African breweries, for example, are bottling Coca-Cola, if they switch from sparkling Schweppes to Coca-Cola, if they don't get the switch right, you get Coca-Cola that tastes like a bit of orange. You can't do that with vaccine. If you're not clean, you get contaminated vaccine or unhappy customers or both. So one has to be very meticulous as you switch your production, and in particular when you do that without proper scheduling or at short notice. We have, however, had a record year in sales, the 82.8 million, 83. That is the highest ever in the company's history. That is fantastic. Sure, inflation adjusted, it's not quite so wonderful, but it's still a very good year. We've had an excellent first quarter since March. The first quarter is normally very quiet. This year it's actually been very good, and we're thrilled with it. There's a strong balance sheet. There's no debt, no gearing, strong cash reserves, some 80 million. There is an aging plant, and that we're working on, and we'll come back to you with the GMP, GLP compliance story. Not looking for grant funding. I want to emphasize that. We're looking for capital expenditure, for capital investment. And our alternatives are to come to our shareholder for capital, alternatively to use our balance sheet to leverage and to gear, as the competitors we compete with are in fact doing, and we want to do that on the basis that we can deliver that return on that investment. External markets and exports, some wonderful ventures that are going throughout Africa, all parts of Africa. We're a major supplier, highly regarded and highly respected. We're aware of the situation in Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe now getting its act together with international support, OBP there. Other parts of Africa also playing a role, and we have that African Union outreach which we take very seriously. And then the Dr. Jesse mentioned on blue tongue in Europe. Europe has and is experiencing a blue tongue outbreak and a blue tongue problem as tropical diseases have crossed the Mediterranean and heading north with global climate change. And OBP, as a world leader in blue tongue, we are right there, and we are engaging with the Europeans with an exchange of vaccines and an exchange of technology. And that is tremendously promising on the future going forward. South Africa has technology that is available to the world as to allow the country to be a respected world leader. We'd be delighted to answer any questions, and thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Advocate Michelle, and Dr. Kelsey. Remember that the presentation from OVP? One other very common feature in both reports or presentations was the fact that you had a major problem of underfunding when it comes to research and development. You've got that Maputo declaration that talks to government having to commit 10% of their GDP towards the research and development. Now, it's a commitment that our country also is part of, but not living to that expectation, which is one of the major challenges that we're confronted with. When we spoke earlier on about that matter of budget, we also had that in mind. So that would also work as part of our own tools as we engage further on the matter. Remember? Any takers? Mr. Gaylor? Mr. Abro? Mr. Bosman? Usual suspect? In that order.
Chairperson, thank you. I didn't hear you speaking about your employment and multiplying employment and also one is like you.
Chairperson, about the employment equity. One would like to hear about that. And also from both these entities, the entity and the LTT, is the type of policy they have. Do they have any HIV policy? So that's very important. I think we need longer time, as you say, Chairperson. There are quite a lot of questions that I would like to get engaged in, like the rural development, you know. If you talk of rural development, because if you go out there, really, the stock is fading away, dying, it's of no value. And you ask yourself a question, yeah, the researchers, what do they do? But I think it will need another session. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. I want to thank the presenters for the presentation. Chair, if one just takes a glance at the balance sheets and things, and if one looks at the challenges facing the livestock industry, not only in South Africa, but SADC and then even further up north, then I must say that this business is not performing the way it should. When one looks at turnovers, which are dropping year on year, if you look at the income statements for the year ended 31st March 2008, there's a drop, whereas there should have been an increase. And, in the country and elsewhere in Africa, there have been certain outbreaks of diseases. The managing director, CEO, gave us an indication of the history of Honest the Poort. Chair, whenever something broke out and something happened, they would say that we've sent the specimens to Honest the Poort. And Honest the Poort had a reputation. It was the premier veterinary facility, I think, on the continent. I don't think there was anything to match it. But I must certainly say, and I'm not blaming the present incumbents, this institution, Chair, OVP, if I look at what I saw 10 years ago and what I'm seeing now, I do not see an improvement. I see a deterioration. So these are just some remarks. This should be the pride of our nation. It should be the pride of Africa. And when you talk of the fact that you've got competition, we allowed the room to our competitors to compete. I don't know if the members there are aware, but for all my sins, I lose a lot of money by farming. I have never one day in the last 10 years been approached by OBP that these are our products and why don't you support us? Never. And I mean, we meet one another at least once a year. Now that is poor marketing, very poor marketing. You have other companies in the business, your competitors, where you have regular adverts. Yes, you do have your Double Sure advert and your what's her name? Blue tongue and that sort of thing. But you have these, your competitors are better organized than you. And hence, we must not complain if someone else takes away the business. Remember, I worked for Dr. Hanson Rupert, my first job in my life, and he taught us one thing. Boys, remember, unseen is unsold. If you don't market yourself, nobody's going to buy your product. So, Chair, this is just so that our new management must brush themselves up. But I think in the last 10 years, Chair, if I remember from my memory and if I look at previous statements as against now, I mean, a business should grow, especially because there are many factors involved. Costs increase, so of course the cost of the product also increases. And that I don't see reflected yet. Now, Chairperson, I've got a couple of questions, particularly on the financial side. If you look at the revenue, 2007, 64 million, 2008, 70 million. An increase of 4 million, that's some business, Chair. There should have been a major increase. Then, Chair, when we look at the operating profit or loss, the operating loss is 6.7 million in 2008. Okay, the operating loss in 2007 was 11.4, but still it's a loss. And if you're a private sector organization, then I would say that the lights are flicking, the danger lights, that you might very well be on the road to possible liquidation if this is a private sector business. The directors of a private sector company, they want to see profits. And I think, Chair, that there is just one tendency amongst us where, because we are state institutions created by the state, we seem not to be concerned about seeing to it that we deliver profits. And we need to guard that.
Thank you.
Chair,
I thought you were done with your fourth question.
No, Chair, sorry. You see, Chair, the unfortunate thing is that with this type of institution, you need to tell them what to do. Not that we are experts, but we have a little bit of knowledge of, you know, 1 + 1 = 2, you know. So we need to tell them that, Chair. Then, Chair...
We'll come back to Mr. Abram.
Can I just finish this one, Chair? There is a foreign exchange loss of 531,000. If we could get an explanation as to what it was.
Thank you, sir. I think from my side, I also need to maybe express the same concerns as Honourable Aron has just highlighted. The question arises, why has OBP been taken away or actually been privatized? And is government not really at this stage still responsible for some of the development and maintenance and oversight in the long-term need for this institution? Because it's, as the member has said, it has been for many, many years the institution in the world that is well known for what they're doing. And it worries me that they have to compete, and he's also highlighted it, against very, very sophisticated international companies with marketing strategies that that obviously is not part of the OBP's strategy at all. They're in the business of making vaccines and not in a selling business of it. I myself, I'm a practical farmer, and when I go into these shops or cooperatives, I see on the floor people that are moving the opposition's products and not OBP, and that worries me because it is our own institution, and the prices of OBP is very, very competitive, and it really boggles my mind that we cannot do something about it. But that is my concern. So my question is, why has government taken their support away from OBP? And what are we doing in connection with the marketing strategy? Because obviously I can understand it might not be one of the main focuses of OBP. But it seems to us that the old equipment, and there again, I think government has a role to play to make finances available, has led to international market law, and that we cannot afford to do, because, I mean, as I said in the beginning, OBP is world renowned. Thank you.
Mr. Pretoria?
Chair, thank you. My question relates to the governance of this institution. As the convention refers to Mahamla Shirzi as a great contributor to the board, and I've just been looking in the annual report of the previous year, at the end of 2008, period 1 April 2007 to 31 March 2008. Mr. Shirzi, for one, was a member of the board for six of the last 6 months of that period, during which the board had 8 meetings and he just ended 0 of the 8. Whereas a person like Dr. Chabele was a member for the last term of the period only, and also attended none of the meetings. But the interesting thing is, the latter person, Dr. Chabele, was actually paid for that. I'm not quite sure how that works, so maybe we can just get some clarity on that. He earned 19,600 rand for not attending any board meetings. The previous one, Mr. Shears, he attended none board meetings. He wasn't paid for that. He simply contributions to the director's fund, but insurance cover was paid for him. That's acceptable. But the way I interpret this thing is that the doctor never attended any meeting with his paid 19,000 rand. Thank you.
And last one, Mr. Trotter.
Thank you, Chairperson. In trying to understand more about the OBP, I would like to know, because in its mission statement, among other things, is to translate science into the research, the product, knowledge, and all. And then they do also mention food security, but nothing has been said in the presentation about that. Nothing about food security. And also, I would like to know, just to clear my mind, whether in their day-to-day functioning, what manufacturing those vaccines, dealing with those viruses and bacteria, what is the relationship, or what is their influence in the production of genetically modified food?
An organization like OVP, given the challenges that we have globally with regard to the swine fever, reference will also be made on some work in progress in terms of vaccine production in that regard. If you would also make a comment on that one. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Let me start off with the question that has been raised by Ms. Chola. You mentioned that we did not mention anything about the food security. You see, the mandate of honest board biological products is the prevention of diseases. And when you prevent diseases from affecting livestock, which livestock is reared for food, which is meat, that is the focus of food security. Okay? In other words, we prevent the affection of the production of meat so that we have got a sure and a secure supply of meat, which is not affected by diseases. That's the overarching agenda of prevention of diseases. Thank you. And then the whole notion of genetically modified foods, the vaccines themselves do not lead to genetically modified foods. It's a different science altogether. It's not part of our area of focus. Okay. And then I think the Medical Research Council, with regard to the swine fever, says, might be the area, the people more inclined towards doing research in that, because they are the ones who are dealing with human vaccine research and so on and so forth. We are more focused on animals. Okay. Now, let me just make a comment regarding the comment made by Mr. Abrams about the loss of expertise and the confusion. You even mentioned that when somebody brings a specimen to OBP, there used to be a scientific response which was recognized worldwide. You see, with the separation of OVI, which is now part of ARC, from OBP in 1992, it kind of bled in the eyes of the public, of who is doing what. For example, if you've got a specimen which requires a diagnostic assessment of what is the disease, that is not the function of under the board biological product. It is the function of the ARC under OVI, their research and so on. So I'm saying this because often, in the eyes of the public, we've had to deal with situations like this. In the past, when there was, for example, an outbreak of the foot and mouth disease in Natal, somewhere, a couple of years ago, we were phoned left, right, and center about people, about the foot and mouth disease vaccines, and so on and so forth, and so forth. But that is actually does not even belong to OPP, it belongs to the other side of the fence. So we need to clean up that kind of thing in the future, but it's not for now. But I understand the confusion in the eyes of the public. This is just something we inherited because these institutions, when we came on board, were already separated in that way. Then there was a question regarding employment equity. We are bound by law to follow employment equity. It's just a pity I have not brought the breakdown in terms of the statistics, in terms of race, who is there. But I, at this stage, am very comfortable with employment equity. It's just that in the technical side area, that's where we have very few Africans and colored and Indians. And because that area is historical, I talked about the aging white workforce. That aging white workforce, which has got the technical expertise and the knowledge of the actual science of the business, are white natives. Okay, but we are working on that to mitigate that risk. As time goes on, we will deal with that aspect. And then you talked about the issue of the HIV and AIDS. Our business, like most businesses in South Africa, and we all know the epidemiology of AIDS, we are also affected. We are trying to mitigate that problem. We try to deal, put together compassionate policies to deal with the staff that are affected by AIDS. We have got professional advice that we provide to staff. We even have got a medical doctor whom we employ to deal with all issues of health, not just HIV/AIDS. So I'm sure we can do more, and I'm still new. I will still be conversing with my management as to what else can be done to support our staff with regard to those issues. And then with regard to governance and the financial aspects that were raised, I'm going to ask my chairman and the chief financial officer to deal with those aspects.
Thank you, Chair. Just one thing on the employment equity. We do report in our annual report on the numbers, and that is on page 25 for the year to March 2008, and the 2009 report is in the process of preparation. We are working towards the 31st of July in accordance with the PFMA. But of approximately 200 employees, over 150 are African. And the representation is clear. Then, if I could answer the comment about the government and the board of directors. Firstly, Mr. Mantla Shezi, although he was appointed, I think, in October 2007, he effectively took up office only at the end of February. He was not available to be with us for that period. And that's why he's down as a director, but he did not attend board or board committee meetings, and he drew no remuneration for that period. I would add that remuneration is actually based on meetings that are attended, necessarily attended, and perhaps small amounts for extra work on an hourly basis if it's an unscheduled interaction. There's no retainer. As far as Dr. Nchabeli was concerned, Dr. Nchabeli was appointed on the end of February 2008 and only served for the month of March during the year in the annual report before you. During that month, he was with us at board strategic planning session, and I think we had an induction session even before he took office, where he'd actually joined us, but not technically as a director at that point. I'm talking end of January, February 2008, when we did an induction session for all the new board members who'd come in at that point. Mr. Shezi and Dr. Nchabeli have played major contributions since then. And you will see in the report for 2009, Dr. Nchabeli's remuneration, both as a non-executive director and his remuneration as an executive acting CEO, and that we've had to deal with. Thank you.
Thanks, Jonathan. On the few questions on the income statement. One was, in fact, the acknowledgement that the performance of the company has almost been dwindling. And in my earlier presentation, I indicated that we've actually been eroding value, in that if you look at the operating losses, as Honorable Abrams indicated, that from 11.4 million in 2007 to 6.7 million in 2008. So those are actually big numbers. So what it says is that out of your own operational performance, you cannot fund the business, and therefore you need to fund it actually from the balance sheet, and that's what has been happening in the company. But also the numbers are actually indicating that even though that has been the case historically, but we're moving in the right direction, in that from 11 million to 6 million. And I'm going to report in the numbers that the auditors are currently looking at, we're looking at about 3 million, which means that we are actually improving. And then the other one that you actually mentioned is that OPP has never approached you about the products that we're selling. We've recognized that, in fact, in the research that was conducted by Objectivity, that was one of the biggest problems about OPP. And we've identified that as one of the weak, in fact, the strategic points that we need to deal with, to the extent that the sale of vaccine is the end to the problem, is addressing the problem. But the information, because you need to get the information in order to understand what vaccines you need to use. And therefore, that's one of the things that, in fact, we've indicated that we need to be selling information. We need to be the first point of call when the end users of our products have problems. They need to know that OPP are the people that will be contacting. And therefore, we have a drive in place where we are actually meeting the end users of our products, where we're giving them information, where we have training programs with them in terms of the vaccines that they need to use, the seasons when they have to actually vaccinate. So that is in process with us. Identify that as a problem that we're dealing with. Thank you.
I don't know whether the question that I'm going to ask may belong to the committee. Last week, when Marie and I were making their presentation, they indicated that there's an entity of press specialists in Sweden. And now I'd like to find out from on that step what people that how do they deal with this disease? Do they have vaccines? For my knowledge, you know, how do you deal with this disease? And also to say to ARDC, I'm sorry if you're crazy with it, but we'll take it as a homework. They also indicated that we don't have fish hatcheries. Fish hatcheries are in the DBS area. And FARDC, how do you assist poor people in making sure that they do have enough fish because they are not able to? Thank you.
Maybe just, Okay, Sequeira.
Just on the report of Kansas in 1998. Now you're coming to tell this committee here that you've got aging skilled people. Since 1998, which is government policy anywhere when the government came in, that you should be skilling people. Especially the youth, there are a lot of youth. What have you been doing? What is your policy in making sure that the youth are skilled? What have you been doing in skilling these underprivileged youth, which are out there? At least ARC has got a plan, but even their plan says that it's too late. There's a lot of a shortage of skills, even in provinces. What are you doing to make sure? What were you doing and what are you doing now? What is your plan to skill the youth? You cannot come and tell us that you've got aging people and all that. I mean, we're not interested in hearing that. What were you doing to make sure that the skills are transferred to our youth?
Okay, can you also, if you could just make a comment on the options that you have. You only made mention in terms of your investments needed. One option gets to be the state. Are you suggesting that you are certainly going to engage with the private investors? Again, in inviting more investments to OVP, is that a suggestion? Which will then go back to one other point raised by Mr. Pretorius, with regard to
the OBP being this very important, you know, entity of the state, and suddenly one with lack of funding, two having been established as a private or as a public company now lately, of course still receiving the funding from the state, but more and more the state almost losing grip of what it is doing. I'm also reading here in your app a clause 5 there that refers to proceeds of sale of shares. Proceeds of any sale of shares in the company by the state shall be paid into the National Revenue Fund. When you consider setting a portion of if it is what you have in mind or you are working on by selling it to private investors, will these all be issues that... Sorry, I also saw a hand here from Mr. Abraham, which is going to be the last, and then we take responses.
Chair, I didn't get a response on that loss of 531,000 foreign exchange. And then, Chair, there's an amount of 436,000 amounts paid to consultants and professional fees. Can you perhaps tell us now for what purposes was that? And then, as far as transactions are concerned, you say that you sold products to the State Department. All they could support you with is 611,000 rand worth of products that they bought. Why? Why don't they buy more from you? And then services procured from state departments, almost 5.8 million. What sort of services did you get from the state departments for that amount of money? Finally, Chair, with regard to your directors, I note here that the period 1 April 2007 to 31 March 2008, the former chairperson received in addition to her emolument reimbursements for traveling expenses, hotel accommodation, car rental, a total of 232,000 for that particular year. Now, that's almost... 20,000 rand per month in additional expenses. And Mr. Mitchell received an amount of 170,000. Can you perhaps tell us why were those expenses incurred and why are they so high? Thank you, Chair.
Chair, if I could answer. First of all, just to deal with the travelling expenses of myself and Mrs. Shabalala, those travelling expenses relate to airfares, myself from Cape Town through to Pretoria, and for Mrs. Shabalala from Durban through to Pretoria, and hotel accommodation and car rentals, where those were not able to be rationalised. To be frank, Mrs. Shabalala and I used to share one car, but we kept the sharing at that. OBP's policy also has not been to remunerate directors for any travelling time. I'd just like to put that on record. As far as the 531,000 forex loss was concerned, I think that arises as an accounting entry between the accrual of an export sale at a rate as at the date the transaction was booked and the final settlement. But the CFO may be able to expand on that. Alternatively, we will get back to you with more information. 436,000 for consultants is payments to professional engineers who have been advising us on plant upgrade and how we can make better use of the plant and equipment we have. Also looking at some of our equipment that we took over from the state, and we took over the responsibility to manage the maintenance from the Department of Public Works, and that led to us getting a lot more closely involved with our own equipment. And that's, I think, where the 436 comes from. Chairman, to come straight through to the question of private investment, sale of equities, and sale of shares, firstly, know that it's not our thinking, we're not working on it, we don't want it, we're not looking for that at all. And I want to put that very clear on record. Sale of shares, that is something that our shareholder can consider, but we can't. So it's something that you can consider, but it's not for us. Where we do have flexibility, and that is only as may be allowed by law, we can receive a capital injection from the state, coming in by, from our shareholder, or we may, if we have permission of the National Treasury and the Minister of Finance, we may raise borrowings, which could be, shall we say, internally from the Reserve Bank or from the Land Bank, or it may be externally through banks in the market. That's the alternative. We can't do that without approval. We can't do that with permission. So we do not have a free hand. We are mindful of the present economic climate. I'm aware, for example, Anglo American and Anglo Gold has raised debt by offering low interest rates and convertible debentures, which are convertible into shares in 5-10 years' time. We haven't got that flexibility. We've got to talk to you. But we'd very much like to think about these things in advance rather than leaving them to the end. But no, we're not planning to dilute, and I think that would be an unwise approach.
Sir, can I just deal with the questions that came regarding the scarcity? Was the scarcity of vets? Veterinarian. Okay. You linked that scarcity of vets to the whole issue of fish. When I indicated my the range of species that we support with vaccine, fish is not there. We look at cattle, sheep, goats, equine, and also, so that's just totally outside of the scope of our mandate, the whole issue of fish. But I can also talk briefly, although it also falls outside the scope, the whole issue of the scarcity of veterinarians. It is a serious problem in the country. You will recall that veterinarians in South Africa used to be trained in only two institutions. They used to be trained in the University of Pretoria and at Medunsa. Then in 1997, a policy decision was taken by the then government to close down the Medunsa faculty and merge it with the University of Pretoria. And which means there is only one place in South Africa where you can produce veterinarians. And that's the problem. And it's a bigger problem, okay? And it actually falls under the education to say how best can we ensure that the South African education system manages to produce more veterinarians. And in fact, another challenge is that veterinarians in South Africa tend to emigrate soon after graduation. And those who specialize tend to specialize in what are called pet animals, dogs and cats and so on and so forth. So, and not in the business of supporting the agricultural animal. So that's the budget. It's a different, completely different discussion. Then coming back to the issue of 1998, I think the honorable member understood me wrongly. Ownership Board is a very, very old institution. It doesn't date back to 1998. Actually, the factory itself, the manufacture of the factory and production of vaccines dates back to 1968. And that's where we talked about the issue of the crumbling infrastructure, which is too old, that needs to be upgraded and so on. It's because the factory is old. But you were also talking about the issue of skilling workers. That is an ongoing thing. In fact, we're as I came on board, it was one area that I identified that we should strengthen to a point that one of the senior executives who has been with the company from 1969, 40 years, who is due to retire in the next 2 years, I actually went to him and asked him if I can use these last few years of his association with us to assist in the skilling of the new people and the transfer of technology and information to them so that by the time it goes on retirement, and we are doing that for all of that as a mitigation, also as part of mitigating risk because of the of the business we are in. Because of the business we are in, we are not like an ordinary run-of-the-mill pharmaceutical company where you can go and get a pharmacist anywhere to assist. This is a very specialized business, and there are very few people in South Africa who, in fact, have got the technological skill to run a plant of that nature.
I think we seem to...
The two questions, one was on the 5.8 million rent, and the question was what kind of services were we receiving from the state. On that one, we, OVI, as part of the ARC, we're treating them as one of the state entities. We are both owned by the same shareholder. And therefore, the services between ourselves and them, we're treating them in terms of related party transactions as that. And therefore, the kind of services that we're receiving from them, there's research that they do on our behalf, and we pay them for those services. So that would be research, that would be implicit media that we're buying from them. I mean, if there are products that we're buying from them, then that would be included in it. And then the second question was on the foreign exchange loss.
So the other question was the 611,000 worth of consumption that you told to the state. My question was, why doesn't the state buy more from you? They are buying from your competitors.
Chair, if I can just clarify on that. One of the things we were horrified to discover as a board 2 years ago was the blacklisting of OVP by certain government, certain areas of government, particularly provincial government, on the basis that a form had indicated that we had 0% held by black shareholders. And this was complete nonsense as far as form filling and, I think, abuse of process somewhere throughout the system. We may have no shareholders, but we are wholly owned by the state, and the state is the country of South Africa. That has been fixed, and all of those processes have been completely unlocked, and for that we can take up particularly the support we've had from the previous Minister of Agriculture and our DG and the department. And
okay, there be no further questions. We should thank both the OVP and also the Cultural Research Council for valuable time spent with this committee. As we said, we intend to spend more time. These are very important structures or entities within the department. Of course, they are working independent, but still very closely associated with the department. We are going to make a follow-up officially on the rather offer to come and pay a visit. We shall engage in those processes with all the necessary requirements accordingly. And I think that should conclude on as far as the 20s are concerned, and perhaps just come back to our own program as a committee. Tomorrow we shall have both the National Agriculture Marketing Council and also the Competition Commission on the price fixing matters. We have also extended an invitation to the Consumer Forum and also the Consumer Protection entity under PTI. So there's been quite a number of inquiries or other interest on this particular one. We shall meet here tomorrow at 9 o'clock still. And with regard to Friday session as per our program with Land Bank, a request that has been submitted to the programming people to move that meeting from Friday to Thursday afternoon, 2 o'clock. So we shall still have to hear, and perhaps when we meet tomorrow, we shall be having a response, so that we are free Friday, as we are going on recess on that, out of that day, so to speak. Okay, thank you once again. Unfortunately, TG and OBP and the Calcutta Research Council, this parliament until October is not providing lunch. We are very poor.
Some housekeeping rules. If we are to see them on Thursday at 2 o'clock, how long are we going to be with them? Because it's absolutely vital that we interact with them. Now, under normal circumstances, if you shut shop at 4:30, we've had 2.5 hours with them.
They are the only, the reason why we only have them, or we had them on Friday, was to give ourselves enough time. So that same principle applies. Give enough time. Thank you, and thanks for all your time and attendance. The meeting is attended.